Have you noticed how most of your worst decisions were made in a hurry? Heart racing, jaw tight, mind convinced the moment would last forever. You said the thing you can't unsay. You quit the thing you hadn't even really tried. You sabotaged a relationship because a wave of anger told you it was truth. Stoicism starts here. You are not your first impulse. You are the space between impulse and action. And in that space, you can turn a chaotic life into a disciplined one. Today isn't about soft inspiration. It's about 10 hard rules that strip drama out of your days and put strength back in your hands. Not theory, practice. If you're ready to live with fewer fires and more clarity, lean in. 1. Don't make permanent decisions on temporary emotions. Anger wants you to act. Wisdom wants you to wait. That's the law. When your nervous system is hot, your judgment is cold. It's not weakness, it's biology. Cortisol spikes, adrenaline floods, and your brain trades long-term wisdom for short-term certainty. The Stoics knew this 2,000 years ago. Epictetus called it first impressions, those early heated interpretations that feel like facts. He didn't say, never feel them. He said, don't obey them on sight. Your job is to buy time until your mind cools down enough to see straight. Here's the frame. If a choice will change your life for months or years, quitting a job, ending a relationship, posting something nuclear, detonating a bridge, you don't touch it while you're flooded. You implement a cooling rule. 24 hours is clean and simple, but even 2 hours can save you. During the cooling window, you don't rehearse the argument, you don't gather allies, you don't scroll for evidence that proves you right. You downshift your physiology and widen your view. Movement helps. A walk, a shower, breath work, 4 seconds in, 6 seconds out, until your pulse agrees you're not in a war. Write the message you want to send, but don't send it. Say the speech you want to deliver into a voice memo you'll delete. Empty the heat without making it the world's problem. After sleep, after a meal, after your body has come back from the ledge, read your words again. Half of them will embarrass you. Good. That's cooling. What remains, shorter, calmer, cleaner, is closer to truth. Marcus Aurelius used to ask, "Is this essential?" That question is a surgical light. Under it, most of our urgent gestures look like performance, not principle. You'll hear a voice telling you that waiting is weak, that if you don't strike now, you'll be disrespected forever. That's the ego talking like a bad coach. Real strength isn't speedy, it's steady. The people you respect most don't panic punch their way through life. They let the storm waste its energy while they conserve theirs. Then they act from proportion. If something genuinely requires a same-day response, waiting can be 30 minutes of cold water and a walk around the block. Still counts. Still smarter than bleeding out your future on the altar of this second. Practical protocol for hot moments. Label the state. I'm flooded. Step away from keyboards and car keys. Breathe on a timer. 5 rounds. 4 in, 6 out. Change temperature. Cold water on wrists, face, or a quick blast of fresh air. Move your body for 10 minutes. Push-ups, stairs, a fast loop outside. Then write the 3 sentences you'd stand behind tomorrow. That's your ceiling for now. If you need a rule to carry, use this. No life-changing decisions after 9 p.m. or inside a spike. You'll be shocked how many disasters were late-night theater with a morning cure. Sometimes you'll wait and still choose the hard thing. Leave, end, confront. Good. The point isn't to avoid decisive action, it's to avoid dumb decisive action. Waiting changes the quality of the move, not necessarily the move itself. You'll say less, say it kinder, and mean it more. You'll protect the door behind you instead of burning the whole building. And the world feels that difference. A calm no has gravity. A frantic no starts 5 new fires. If you want a sentence to carry into your week, make it this. I don't build a permanent life with temporary weather. The storm passes. Your choice remains. Let your choices be worthy of the person you're becoming, not the emotion you were drowning in. When you practice this, you'll notice a strange, beautiful shift. Fewer apologies, fewer messes to clean up, fewer mornings you wake up wishing you could unsend yourself. That's not luck. That's discipline. That's you stepping into the space the Stoics guarded like treasure, the space where power actually lives. 2. Action breeds clarity. Thinking alone won't save you. You can't think your way out of a life you behaved your way into. That's a hard pill, especially if you're intelligent, reflective, and good with words. The mind loves to believe another hour of analysis will finally line up the stars. The perfect plan, the perfect timing, the perfect mood. Meanwhile, months slide by. Stoicism doesn't disrespect thought. It disciplines it. Thought is a tool, not a habitat. Marcus wrote, "Waste no more time arguing what a good man should be. Be one translation. Take a step, however imperfect, and let the step teach you what the chair never will." Action is a light switch. Rooms that looked haunted in your head turn ordinary once you enter them. The conversation you've scripted 10 times becomes simpler after the first sentence leaves your mouth. The gym you've researched for weeks becomes less intimidating after 2 minutes on the rower. That's because reality carries data that rumination can't simulate. Textures, resistance, feedback. Until you meet the thing, you're negotiating with a phantom. After you move, you're dealing with facts. Facts are friendlier than fantasies because you can work with them. Here's the trap. Overthinkers confuse certainty with safety. Once I'm sure, I'll begin. But certainty is an outcome of movement, not a prerequisite. The Stoic move is to define the smallest, least heroic action that puts you in contact with reality fast. Call them clarity reps, short, repeatable experiments that replace speculation with signal. 15 minutes is enough, not eternal commitment, not a grand declaration. 15 minutes. Make the call, draft the email, open the document and write a messy page. Walk into the class and stand in the back. Ask one question that would embarrass you a little. The rep is the win. The clarity is the prize. You'll protest, "But what if I choose wrong?" The paradox is cute. By trying to avoid the wrong door, you sit in a hallway where every door is wrong, because none of them are lived. Action makes even a wrong door right, because it gives you evidence. You feel the fit. You see the cost. You discover the part of you that comes alive, or shuts down, inside that path. Now you can pivot with dignity. Overthinking, in contrast, manufactures regret. You mourn paths you never tried, relationships you never risked, careers you never tested. That grief is heavier than any single mistake, because it compounds across years. Ritual helps. Build a daily clarity window. 15 minutes, ideally early, when your courage is awake. During that window, the rule is movement. No researching alternatives, no perfecting, no waiting for the right song or the right pen. Movement toward the thing that matters. If you're writing, the cursor blinks and you type until the timer ends. If you're building a business, you contact 3 potential customers with a real offer. If you're healing a relationship, you send 1 clean, non-defensive message that opens the door. When the timer ends, you record what reality told you. Tomorrow, you iterate. Pair this with a weekly pilot hour, 1 hour, where you run a slightly bolder experiment. Teach a micro class. Publish the piece. Tour the gym you might join and book the intro session. Shadow someone doing the work you want. The point isn't polish, it's proximity. The closer you are to the thing, the fewer stories your mind can invent. And something holy happens when you repeat this for a month. The fog thins. You're not hunting for motivation in podcasts, you're mining it from progress. Progress is the best stimulant on earth, and it's legal. Of course, fear will negotiate. It will offer 1,000 smart reasons to wait. Market conditions, family timing, just one more book. Respect the voice, then measure it against reality. Ask, what can I learn in the next 15 minutes that thinking cannot teach me? Then earn the answer. You'll find that action shrinks most monsters to their actual size. The phone call is awkward for 40 seconds, then human. The gym welcomes you because they're in the business of beginners. The draft is ugly, yes, and now it exists. Ugly can be edited. Imaginary cannot. There's also a moral dimension the Stoics understood. Movement builds character because it trains you to choose in conditions that aren't perfect. Every clarity rep is a vote for the kind of person you want to be. One who moves with incomplete information. One who learns in public. One who can be humble without being hesitant. That humility is power. It frees you from the vanity of perfection and lets you collect wins that perfectionists never see because they never start. Keep your metrics small and honest. Did you show up for the rep? Did you extract a lesson? Did you adapt tomorrow's step based on today's signal? That trilogy, show, learn, adjust, beats brilliance that stays theoretical. And remember, thinking doesn't disappear, it relocates. Instead of living in your head, it walks beside you, taking notes while your feet touch the ground. That's the right order. Movement first, meaning second. If you need a line to carry, take this. Clarity follows contact. Touch the thing you're afraid to touch. Let it tell you what it is. Then touch it again tomorrow. You won't outthink your way to a new life. You will outact your old habits, one small rep at a time, until motion becomes your natural language and certainty becomes something you create, not something you wait for. 3. Control the controllables. Let the rest go. You can spend a lifetime trying to manage weather, or you can learn to sail. That's the Stoic split in plain language. There are forces you will never bend. Markets, moods, algorithms, other people's choices, yesterday. And there are levers that sit right in your hands. Your attitude, your attention, your effort, your standards, your next right move. The tragedy is how often we reverse them. We grip the wind and neglect the wheel. Then we call the chaos fate, when much of the turbulence came from abandoning what was ours to steer. Start here. Say it out loud. What's mine? What's not? Put it on paper if you have to. The conversation's outcome? Not yours. The quality of your preparation and the clarity of your message? Yours. Whether they like you? Not yours. Whether you showed up with integrity and kept your promise? Yours. The size of the storm? Not yours. The angle of your sail? Yours. This sounds simple until your nervous system heats up and tries to micromanage the universe. That's when the practice begins. Control is not a thought. It's a choreography. Return attention to the levers you can pull again and again until your body believes you. Notice how anxiety behaves when you chase the uncontrollable. It multiplies. You replay someone's tone and imagine meanings. You refresh the dashboard like a gambler waiting for a roll. You rewrite the message 12 times to pre-solve reactions you can't own. The more you do, the smaller you feel, because your power is hunting in the wrong forest. Try the opposite for one day. When your mind grabs at what isn't yours, label it. Not mine. Then immediately ask the follow-up. So what is? And touch it. Don't just name it. Act on it. If clarity is yours, write the three clean sentences that express it. If readiness is yours, rehearse for 10 minutes. If presence is yours, put the phone face down and breathe for 60 seconds until your shoulders drop. The mind needs proof, not slogans. Give it proof. There's an elegance to this that people miss. Focusing on controllables doesn't make you passive. It makes you precise. It narrows your aim to the part of the sequence where effort compounds. You can't force a client to sign, but you can send a proposal so clean it reduces their cognitive load. You can't make a friend apologize, but you can speak your boundary in language that leaves no hooks for debate. You can't stop the algorithm from changing, but you can publish on a cadence that builds trust independent of spikes. Precision beats panic. It also builds dignity because you stop bargaining your peace with things that never promise to obey you. Let's make it tactile. Build a daily dichotomy minute at the top of your most important task. 1 minute, timer on. Divide a page. Left column, mine. Right column, not mine. Write bullet fragments, not essays. Then pick one item from the left and move it forward in the next 10 minutes. When the urge to check what isn't yours returns, as it will, use a physical reset. Stand, stretch, one slow breath in for 4, out for 6, eyes on a fixed point across the room. Sit back down and touch the lever again. Repetition teaches the nervous system that safety lives in action, not prediction. What about relationships, the messiest arena? The same rule holds. You cannot choreograph another adult's growth. You can model your standard, say what you mean, and leave space for them to meet you. If they don't, your lever is choice. Adjust distance, adjust access, adjust intimacy. Choosing distance is not control, it is stewardship. You're not punishing them for being themselves. You're protecting yourself from patterns that drain your life. Many of our deepest resentments come from trying to control the uncontrollable and refusing to control the controllable, coaching, pleading, hinting, while never moving our feet. Work obeys the law, too. You won't dominate outcomes in a complex world, but you can become ferociously consistent with inputs. A simple cadence, write for 90 minutes, reach out to 3 people, ship one thing imperfectly, will outperform mood-based effort across a year. Why? Because outcomes lag. If you worship immediate results, you'll quit before the curve turns. If you anchor to inputs, you'll still be moving when the world finally catches up. That steadiness is rare, and rare becomes valuable. There's a spiritual relief in surrendering what isn't yours. You stop praying to the God of control and start cooperating with reality. Cooperation is not surrender, it's alignment. You stop shouting at the river and start learning its current, where to cross, when to wait, how to angle your strokes. The river does not care about your feelings. It also isn't out to get you. It moves. Your choice is to move intelligently within it. That choice is freedom disguised as discipline. Expect withdrawal. The mind addicted to what if will pitch a fit when you take away its favorite toy. It will tempt you with catastrophes. If you don't chase, you'll lose everything. Let it talk while you work your lever. Then collect your evidence at day's end. Ask, what moved because I moved what I could? Keep a small ledger of these wins. Emails answered with calm, pages written in fog, workouts done without fireworks, boundaries held without paragraphs. The ledger is not for ego, it's for trust. Each line says, This is where power lives. In the end, the Stoic promise is quiet. Life gets lighter when you stop carrying what isn't yours. Not easier, lighter. Your mind clears because it only holds tools it can use. Your hours gain weight because they aren't bleeding into fantasies. Your relationships become truer because you've stopped trying to be their weather and started being your own anchor. Keep the question close like a compass you can touch in the dark. What's mine? What's not? Then move your hands only where the answer says yes. The wind will keep being wind. You will keep being the sailor. And that's enough. 4. Overthinking ruins good moments and simple problems. You know that feeling when a perfectly fine moment turns heavy because your mind won't stop adding subtitles. The coffee was warm, the sun was kind, the text was neutral, and then your brain started workshopping 10 alternate meanings, 3 possible betrayals, and a future that hasn't happened. Overthinking doesn't just create stress, it vandalizes what's already good. Stoicism calls us back to what is, this breath, this task, this person in front of you, because reality, as it stands, is almost always simpler than the movie you're screening in your head. Seneca warned that we suffer more in imagination than in reality. You've seen it. A small problem becomes a sprawling saga because you keep feeding it attention like oxygen to a flame. Overthinking loves ambiguity because ambiguity is blank space for fear to paint on. A delayed reply becomes rejection. A raised eyebrow becomes judgment. A slow month becomes, it will always be like this. Notice the pattern. Your mind trades facts for forecasts. Forecasts feel smart, even protective, but they rarely improve your response. They just paralyze it. Action thrives on clarity. Rumination breeds static. You think you're preparing. You're actually rehearsing pain. The world isn't doing this to you, your lens is, and the lens can be swapped. Use a 3-part interrupt that drags you from cinema to contact. What's real? What matters? What's next? Real means observable without interpretation. They haven't replied in 6 hours, is real. They're ignoring me, is a story. Matters means significance relative to your values and goals. Does this affect health, safety, a core commitment? If not, the energy you're giving it is likely disproportionate. Next means the smallest concrete move that nudges reality forward. Not a perfect plan, a single nudge. Send the one sentence follow-up tomorrow. Return to your task for 20 minutes. Put on shoes and walk. The minute you ask those 3 questions, the storm loses volume. You cut away the drama glue and the day gets lighter. Your body is your ally in this. Overthinking is rarely just mental. It's physiological arousal without an outlet. Shoulders creep up, breath goes shallow, vision narrows. Before you chase another thought, change state. Plant your feet flat. Inhale through the nose for 4, exhale for 6, 10 rounds. Look at one unmoving point across the room. Feel the weight of your hands. You're telling your nervous system, we are safe enough to choose. Choice is impossible while your body believes you're under attack. Calm the animal, then guide the mind. Bring your thoughts to trial. Write the feared sentence at the top of a page. They don't respect me. This project will fail. I always mess this up. Under it, create 2 columns. Evidence for, evidence against. Force yourself to list 3 items in each. Rumination hates balanced inquiry because it thrives on selective memory. You'll often find your evidence was vibe-based, not fact-based. When the scales even a little, your next action becomes obvious. Clarify with a message, improve the deliverable, or simply let time do its slow cleaning. Remember, Not every knot needs your teeth. Many loosen on their own if you stop tugging. Adopt the one-sentence rule in conversations you keep rewriting in your mind. If you had to say it in one clean line, what would you say? No context pile, no preemptive defense, no apology costume. Just the truth you could sign your name under tomorrow. Overthinking loves paragraphs because paragraphs invite you to manage their reaction. A single line respects both of you. You by keeping your center, them by trusting their adulthood. Paradoxically, your brevity increases the chance of a clear reply. People respond better to signals than to storms. Create friction between you and your spinning. Use a timer, 10 minutes for thinking, then movement. When the bell rings, your legs move before your mind negotiates. Water glass, quick tidy, a lap outside, 10 push-ups, 2 pages of reading. You're training a new reflex. We don't sit in the spiral. We step out and touch the world. After movement, return and do the smallest next step tied to the issue. If it's work, write 3 sentences. If it's fitness, do 5 minutes of the workout. If it's a relationship, draft that one clean line. The goal isn't to fix everything, it's to break the trance. There's a kindness piece here. Overthinking is often an attempt to protect, insecure attachment, rehearsing danger so it can brace. Thank that part for trying to help, then give it a job that actually helps. Presence. We're going to be with what's real for the next 20 minutes. Make a short list of realities you can honor. Breathe, send, build, move, rest. Tick one, then the next. Protection by presence beats protection by prediction every time. Guard your bright spots. Overthinking is a thief that hates joy, because joy proves life can be simple and good. When you catch a good moment, don't interrogate it. Inhale it. Name 3 concrete details. The warmth of the mug, the light on the table, the cadence of a friend's laugh. Lock them in with attention. The Stoics practiced gratitude as perception training, teaching the mind to notice what already works. When you savor specifics, your brain has fewer resources to fund imaginary fires. You become harder to spook because reality gets equal billing with fear. What about big decisions that deserve thought? Give them containers. I'll think about this from 4 to 4:30. Then I will decide the next small step. Containers turn analysis into a task rather than a lifestyle. If the decision still feels foggy, it's usually because you haven't gathered real-world data. Run a micro-experiment and revisit tomorrow. Decisions ripen when reality touches them. Your new identity is simple. You are a reality first person who spends energy in proportion to facts. You don't let your mind turn molehills into mountains, nor do you shame yourself for feeling worry. You use worry as a cue to apply the 3-question lens and re-enter the world with 1 clean move. Day by day, the knots in your head loosen because your hands are busy building. That's the quiet miracle. Life gets better, not when you think more, but when you think cleaner and act sooner. If this resonates, anchor it with, I choose facts over forecasts. 5. Commitment, consistency, then persistence. Everyone loves the beginning. The book still smells new. The gym fob feels like a promise. The calendar is freshly baptized with color-coded blocks. Ignition is intoxicating, but ignition isn't identity. The Stoic life is built not on one fiery yes, but on thousands of quiet renewals of that yes when nobody's watching. That's why this lesson has 3 different muscles: commitment, consistency, and persistence. They sound similar, but they do very different jobs in your life. If you don't respect the difference, you'll confuse a spark for a hearth, a week of effort for a way of being, and you'll keep calling yourself undisciplined when you're actually undertrained for the phase you're in. Commitment is the decision that reorders your priorities. It's the contract you sign with yourself that says, this matters enough to pay in time, comfort, and ego. Without commitment, nothing else can stand. But commitment alone is like writing a beautiful mission statement for a company that never opens its doors. You felt inspired. Good. Now open the doors every day. That's consistency. Consistency is boring on purpose. It's the showing up rhythm that turns identity from a slogan into a habit loop. You don't negotiate with mood. You honor the appointment. Even 5 minutes counts, especially 5 minutes, because it keeps the groove alive. Then comes persistence, the most misunderstood of the three. Persistence is not white-knuckle suffering for its own sake. It's the refusal to abandon the path when motivation dips and novelty fades. It's the stubborn, almost tender loyalty to the work through plateaus, setbacks, and silence. Think of your journey in phases. Phase 1, ignition. You define the why in language you can feel, not just admire. I train because a strong body calms my mind. I write because clarity saves my life. I build this business because I want my time to belong to me. The why has to carry weight when the room is empty. Then you choose a small, concrete starting ritual, something that's so easy it borders on insulting. 10 push-ups, 200 words, 1 sales email. You're not proving your greatness. You're proving your startability. Do that for a week and protect the ritual like a lit match cupped in your hands. Phase 2. Groove. Here you move from occasional to automatic. You pick a time and place and become a little superstitious about them. Same chair, same playlist, same water glass. Your brain loves cues. It relaxes when it doesn't have to decide anew each day. This is where you stop counting streaks and start living a cadence. Miss a day? Return the next day with no ceremonies of self-hate. The rule is simple. Never miss twice for the same reason. That one sentence will save you more progress than any motivational speech. Consistency thrives on forgiveness. Beating yourself up is just another form of ego. Loud, dramatic, useless. Phase 3. Grind. Not the toxic grind that worships exhaustion, but the honest grind that accepts work as work. The music of novelty fades. Your numbers plateau. The world doesn't clap. Here is where most people rebrand quitting as pivoting, when in fact they never stayed long enough to earn a meaningful pivot. Persistence speaks softly. Keep your inputs steady and your feedback loops clean. Weekly review, not hourly panic. Adjust technique, not identity. You don't ask, am I talented? You ask, what is the next small improvement? If you're lifting, it's one more rep or 2% more load. If you're writing, it's one tighter paragraph. If you're selling, it's one clearer offer. Small improvements compound like interest. Drama compounds like debt. Of course, your mind will bargain. If it's this hard, maybe it isn't meant to be. That's the romance addict in your head arguing against marriage. Real mastery rarely feels like a movie montage. It feels like repetition with attention. The Stoics would tell you, focus on the virtue of the act, not the applause. Show up, because showing up makes you stronger, clearer, freer, not because today's measure hit your fantasy. When you detach your effort from the scoreboard, you free yourself to do the only thing that has ever moved any scoreboard, consistent action. A tactic to hold all three muscles together, build a three-line daily contract and sign it each morning. Line 1. Commitment. Today I honor my why by doing blank. Line 2. Consistency. At this o'clock, in this place, for this minutes. Line 3. Persistence. If it feels flat, I will still complete the minimum and record one lesson. Keep these cards where you can see them. The contract is not a threat. It's a promise to the future you who keeps getting shorted by your moods. End the day with a micro debrief. What made showing up easier? What got in the way? What's my 1% tweak for tomorrow? You're not judging, you're coaching. Protect your environment with the same seriousness you bring to your intentions. Make friction your friend. Lay out the shoes at the foot of the bed so the morning walk has no debate. Open the document the night before so the cursor is waiting. Set the equipment by the door. Put your phone in another room during your sacred block. You're not weak for needing these tricks. You're wise. The great mistake is assuming character can overpower architecture. Character designs architecture. Architecture protects character when willpower is busy elsewhere. There will be days you do the work and feel nothing. Keep them. There will be days you break your own streak. Forgive them. There will be days you shock yourself with ease and flow. Enjoy them without superstition. What matters is the identity you're rehearsing, the person who keeps promises to themselves in unremarkable ways. That person is dangerous, in the best sense, because they no longer need perfect conditions to move. They make conditions by moving. They don't wait for motivation. They manufacture it by honoring the ritual. They don't worship outcomes. They build a life around inputs that honor their values. When you look back after 90 days of this, you'll notice the quiet revolutions. Your confidence is heavier because it's been earned in small payments. Your anxiety is lighter because you've stopped treating every dip as an omen. Your results, whatever metric you track, have climbed, not because you discovered a secret, but because you finally learned to treat time like an ally. Commitment chose the path. Consistency paved it. Persistence kept walking when the sky turned grey. That's how ordinary people perform extraordinary turnarounds, without fanfare, without permission, with a pen, a clock, and a promise renewed each morning. 6. You won't find purpose. You create it where you stand. You've been taught to hunt for purpose like it's a lost artifact buried under a perfect job, a city with better weather, or a mentor who finally sees you. So you search, compare, scroll, relocate, and still feel hollow. The Stoic reversal is ruthless and freeing. You don't find purpose, you assign it. Meaning isn't a treasure you dig up, it's a responsibility you pick up. Seneca would say, life isn't short, we just waste a lot of it. One of the biggest wastes is waiting for a thunderclap of destiny, instead of quietly building a direction where your feet already are. Think about the moments in your life that actually felt meaningful. They weren't spectacle. They were ordinary scenes you infused with intention, helping a friend move when you were tired, finishing a tough shift without bitterness, writing a page when nobody would read it, being fully present for a child's story that wandered everywhere. In each case, you didn't discover a cosmic assignment. You chose to show up with quality. That choice, repeated, becomes a through line. And a through line, not a lightning bolt, is what most people call purpose when they finally notice it. The mind resists this because fantasies are easier than practices. It's romantic to believe there's a single calling with your name stamped on it. It's sobering to accept that your calling is to pour excellence, courage, and service into whatever is in front of you today. Stoicism collapses the gap between someday and now. Marcus Aurelius wrote of doing the work of a human being, gentle, brave, truthful, right here, right now, in the role you occupy. Not forever, today. When you treat today's roles with reverence, they mutate. The task you resented becomes a dojo where you train your attention. The job you tolerate becomes a laboratory for integrity and competence. The relationships you coasted through become arenas to practice patience, boundaries, and love that tells the truth. Here's the practical pivot. Stop interrogating life with, "What is my purpose?" and start interrogating yourself with, "What purpose will I assign to this next hour?" You turn the volume down on cosmic speculation and turn the volume up on concrete contribution. Start microscopic. Name one person you'll help today and how. Not a grand gesture. One act that costs you a little comfort and gives someone else a little strength. Send a clean, encouraging note that asks for nothing back. Solve one annoying problem without announcing it. Share a skill with a colleague and let them take the credit. The ego will flinch. Let it. That flinch is proof you're shifting from self-display to service, which is where durable purpose is born. Pair this with craft. Purpose sticks to competence. When you grow skill, you grow agency. When you grow agency, you can aim that agency at something larger than you. Pick one domain in your current life and decide to be quietly great at it over the next 90 days. If you're at a register, master the micro rituals: eye contact, tone, pace, recovery from mistakes. If you're on calls, master the brief, the follow-up, the silence that makes your words land. If you're studying, master the pre-commitment: chair, time, page count, no theatrics. Excellence generates pride without bragging. Pride without bragging generates momentum. Momentum makes it easier to attach your effort to causes bigger than your mood. But what if I'm in the wrong field? Then let contribution clarify it. You don't have to spend 5 years to learn a field is misaligned. 6 weeks of generous, consistent effort will tell you a lot. If, after showing up fully, the work still deadens you, your energy doesn't circulate, and your values keep clashing with the environment, good. You have evidence, not just boredom. Now your pivot is informed, not impulsive. And even then, you don't wait to find the right thing before living with purpose. You carry the habit of assigned meaning into the next chapter. Purpose is a method you travel with, not a destination that saves you. There's a Jungian layer worth honoring. We crave singular destiny because it flatters the persona. I am special because I was chosen. Individuation asks for something truer. Become solid enough to choose. When you stop asking the world to crown you and start crowning your actions with attention and responsibility, the self gets heavier. People feel it as presence. Opportunities find that presence because it is already serving. Purpose begins to look suspiciously like your character interacting with a need. Guard against the purity trap. You don't need a perfect cause to live a meaningful day. You need a clear standard for how you'll move through what's already in your hands. Set a daily purpose sentence each morning in present tense. I move through today as someone who may. Fill in with verbs that tug you forward, serves, finishes, tells the truth, learns fast, leaves places better. Keep it visible. Then choose 3 actions that express it before noon. If the afternoon goes sideways, you've already lived your purpose for the day, and the day can't take that back. Finally, remember that purpose is felt in the body. When you align responsibility with values, agitation lowers and warmth rises. Meals taste better when they're earned. Sleep deepens when you kept your word to yourself. Conversations simplify because you're no longer selling a persona, you're offering a life. That sensation, quiet rightness, isn't mystical. It's the nervous system recognizing coherence. Chase it not with fantasies, but with practice. You aren't waiting to be discovered. You're deciding to be useful. You aren't hunting a voice in the clouds. You're becoming a person whose daily choices sing, And maybe that's the only purpose worth trusting. To leave each hour a little cleaner than you found it, each person a little stronger, and yourself a little truer, right where you stand. 7. Letting go is hard, and usually the right move. There's a reason you hold so tightly to what's already hurting you. It's familiar. The job that drains you, the friendship that only calls in crisis, the identity built on an old story. These things feel like home, even when they feel like prison. The Stoics never confused attachment with virtue. They taught detachment not as apathy, but as alignment. Release what no longer serves your nature, so your energy can serve what does. Seneca's warning echoes here. You don't have a short life. You just spend a lot of it clinging to what's done. Letting go is a skill, and most days it is the right move, not because quitting is easy, but because staying is quietly killing your future. Start with the real reason you grip, fear of the gap. Between the hand that lets go and the hand that takes hold of the next thing, there's air, uncertainty, silence, the unknown. That gap terrifies the nervous system, so you rationalize. It's not that bad. Maybe next quarter. They'll change. But your body keeps the score. Sunday dread, shallow sleep, a quiet resentment that leaks into everything else you love. Stoicism invites a braver arithmetic. Judge choices by their long-term cost to character, not by the short-term comfort of predictability. If staying requires you to become smaller, meaner, or more dishonest with yourself, the price is too high. Call it what it is. Self-betrayal dressed as loyalty. Letting go does not mean flipping tables. It often begins as private clarity. Write the sentence you've been avoiding in one clean line. This role is over. This friendship is one-sided. This version of me is finished. Put the line where you'll see it. Not to dramatize, to end the gaslighting you've been doing to yourself. When you name the truth, the mind stops spending energy arguing with what it already knows. Energy returns. And with energy comes options. You couldn't see when you were busy defending the past. Now turn clarity into choreography. Think in exits, not explosions. You're aiming for dignity, not drama. If it's a job, set a timeline and the skills you'll sharpen while you land the next role. If it's a habit, shrink the behavior and starve its cues. Change the route home, clear the shelf, cancel the auto-renew. If it's a relationship, adjust access with clean language and clean behavior. Fewer late-night rescues, more daylight boundaries. No mixed signals that buy short-term comfort with long-term confusion. Don't reopen closed doors, build better rooms, isn't a slogan, it's construction notes. Spend your evenings measuring lumber for the life you want, not reminiscing in the hallways of the house you've outgrown. Expect grief. The Stoics didn't deny emotion, they disciplined it. You will miss the routine, the role, the rush of being needed. You may mourn a future you once imagined with this job, this person, this identity. Let the sadness move without recruiting it as a lawyer for staying. Grief can be clean, felt, honored, integrated, when it isn't chained to bargaining. If I cry, maybe it means there's still a chance. Number, it means you're human. You can both hurt and head forward. Marcus would tell you to keep your gaze on what virtue asks now. Honesty, courage, temperance. The feeling will trail behind the action, and one day you'll notice it no longer owns your mornings. The fear of regret is loud here. What if I'm making a mistake? You might be. But there are two kinds of regret: the sharp sting of a wrong turn and the chronic ache of never turning. The first teaches quickly. The second teaches nothing and lasts forever. You can correct a path you're walking. You cannot correct a fantasy you never left. Take the path that gives you feedback. Movement is merciful. it clarifies. Stagnation is cruel, it preserves confusion. Guard against nostalgia, its memory with the rough edges sanded off. The version of us you replay skips the part where you kept apologizing for your needs. The highlight reel of your old role edits out the Sundays you dreaded Monday. Pull the full footage. When the sweet parts appear, thank them, and then ask the adult question, does this still meet my standards? Standards are how you love your future. They are not punishments, they are promises. When you raise them, some doors close with a click that sounds like relief. Make the new space intentional. The hand that lets go must also reach. Fill the freed hours with acts that strengthen the person you're becoming. Training, study, building, relationships that challenge you kindly. Leave less empty time for the old pattern to knock. Replace the ritual of rumination with the ritual of making. One page, one pitch, 1 hour of deep learning a day. Purpose quiets craving. As your days gather substance, the past stops shining. It starts shrinking to its true size. Here's a simple litmus test for whether letting go is likely the right move. You've had the same conversation with yourself 3 times in the last 6 months and changed nothing. That loop is a verdict. When words don't move life, life is asking for deeds. Choose one deed within the next 7 days that makes the break visible in the world. Not a declaration, a deed. Ship the resignation. Return the key. Cancel the renewal. Unfollow quietly. Pack the box. The moment you act, peace slips a foot in the door. You won't feel invincible after you let go. You'll feel honest. And honesty has a strange side effect. Energy. Meals taste better. Sleep deepens. The mirror gets quieter. The day opens like a window you forgot could move. That's not fate rewarding you. That's friction leaving your life. You stopped dragging a dead thing so your steps got light. Keep them that way. Don't circle back to check if the door is still closed. It is. Build the better room. If you need a line to carry as the doubt returns, try this. I choose standards over nostalgia. Say it when the old song plays. Then turn down the volume and take one step into the life that can only meet you after you free your hands. 8. Fear is a compass, not a cage. Most people treat fear like a stop sign. Stoicism treats it like a road sign. Information about where growth lives. The instinct to freeze or flee is ancient and useful when there's a cliff edge or a charging dog. But in modern life, the threats that spike your pulse are usually social and internal. Rejection, embarrassment, uncertainty, visible effort that might not pay off. These are not cliffs, they're corridors, and fear, properly read, points to the corridor that, if walked, will upgrade your life the fastest. Epictetus would say, it's not things that disturb us, but our judgments about them. Reframe the judgment, and fear shifts from jailer to guide. First, separate danger from discomfort. Danger means harm likely if I proceed. Discomfort means feelings likely if I proceed. Your nervous system doesn't always know the difference. Your prefrontal cortex must referee. Ask a clean question. What is the worst realistic outcome if I take this step? Not catastrophic fantasy, realistic. If the answer is reputational sting, awkwardness, learning in public, or a small financial risk you can absorb, you're looking at a growth edge, not a death trap. Edges are where you get better. The longer you avoid them, the smaller your life becomes. Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's the correct classification of it. Next, name the value hiding behind the fear. You're afraid to make the call because you value dignity. You're afraid to publish because you value excellence. You're afraid to set a boundary because you value harmony. Good. values are present. Now ask the Stoic inversion, which action better serves the value over time? Protecting harmony today by avoiding the boundary creates chaos later. Protecting excellence today by refusing to publish creates mediocrity later. Values misapplied become vices. Courage realigns them with reality. Turn fear into a training plan. Build a fear ladder. 5 rungs that move from small discomfort to bigger stakes. If public speaking terrifies you, rung 1 is a 60-second voice note to a friend. Rung 2 is a short update in a small meeting. Rung 3 is a 3-minute share in a community group. Rung 4 is a 5-minute talk at work. Rung 5 is a recorded 10-minute presentation. You climb 1 rung per week, not because you enjoy trembling, but because repeated contact turns novelty into normal. The Stoics drilled this with voluntary discomfort. Cold water, hard benches, simple meals, to prove that survivable discomfort loses its power when chosen. Adopt the fear rep before noon rule. Every day, pick 1 action that you habitually delay because it makes your stomach tighten. Send the pitch, ask the question, raise your price, request feedback, book the session, introduce yourself. It should take under 10 minutes and be visible in the world. Before noon, do it. Then record the result, not just the feeling. Feelings are weather, results are data. After 30 days of fear reps, 2 things happen. Your baseline anxiety drops because your brain stops equating fear with inaction. And your life expands because doors open that rumination could never unlock. Your body is the hinge. Courage is biochemical before it's philosophical. When the fear surge hits, use a short physical reset. Plant your feet, inhale through the nose, then release 2 quick exhales through the mouth. A physiological sigh to lower CO2 and soften the alarm. Roll your shoulders back, eyes on the horizon. Say, out loud if you can, "We can carry this." Then move within 5 seconds. The longer you negotiate, the louder fear becomes. Action. While the window is open, teaches your nervous system that activation can coexist with movement. That pairing is freedom. Language matters. Replace "I'm anxious" with "there is anxiety." Replace "I'm scared" with "fear is present." That tiny linguistic gap turns identity into observation. You are the observer choosing a move, not the emotion choosing for you. Marcus reminded himself to meet impressions with reasoned replies. Your reasoned reply can be a sentence you trust. "I don't need easy, I need aligned." Or, "I can be afraid and still be effective." Short, repeatable, true. Expect the mind to propose delay disguised as prudence. "Let me get 1 more certification, 1 more edit, 1 more week to think." Prudence protects, perfection delays. Give prudence a job with a deadline, a 24-hour checklist for risks you truly must reduce: safety, legality, ethics, budget. After that, move. If you wait for fear to approve your plan, you will wait until your courage atrophies. Approval isn't coming. Momentum is yours to start. Use shields for other people's fear, too. Much of the pushback you'll get when you take bolder steps is projection. Loved ones offering you their ceiling as if it's a map. Build a filter. Source arrow signal. Arrow. Self-check arrow step. Source: "Has this person done what I'm attempting?" Signal: "Is there actionable information here? A risk I missed? Or just vibes?" Self-check: "Am I reacting from ego or openness?" Step: take 1 calibrated action anyway. As you rack up moves, your own evidence starts to drown out borrowed limits. Don't let their ceiling become your floor. Isn't an attitude. It's an operating procedure. Courage also needs recovery. You can't live in red line and expect clarity. Pair fear reps with restoration, sleep that starts before midnight, training that lifts your gaze, food that steadies, time in quiet that recalibrates. The stronger your base, the cheaper each act of courage becomes. Fear feeds on fatigue. The well-rested are harder to scare. Finally, remember why this matters. Fear hoards potential. Every avoided conversation keeps a better relationship on hold. Every unsent proposal keeps a better career on hold. Every unspoken truth keeps a better self on hold. Stoicism doesn't ask you to become reckless. It asks you to become responsible for the life fear keeps postponing. The next version of you isn't hidden in a book or a motivational clip. It's hiding one step past the edge your stomach complains about. Step there daily. Let fear point. Let reason plan. Let your feet decide. And when the heart kicks, smile, compass acquired. 9. People project their limits. Build a shield. Walk long enough with a dream in your hands, and you'll start carrying other people's fears along with it. They won't always look like fear. Sometimes they arrive dressed as wisdom, love, caution, realism. Are you sure? Isn't that risky? People like us don't... That last one is the giveaway. People like us. Translation: this is the ceiling I live under. Please accept it as your sky. The Stoic move isn't to hate these voices or to obey them. It's to filter them. Most criticism is a mirror, not a map. It reflects the speaker's history, wounds, and bargains. If you mistake mirrors for maps, you'll spend years walking in circles that keep someone else safe and keep you small. Begin with the premise that projection is normal. We all do it. We export what we can't hold. A friend who quit on their art explains why yours won't sell. A colleague who fears asking for more advises you to be grateful. A parent who survived a different era protects you by narrating worst-case scenarios until your courage runs out of oxygen. None of this makes them villains. It makes them human. Your job is to become a responsible receptor. You don't let every frequency into your nervous system. You build a shield, permeable, not paranoid, that lets signal through and keeps residue out. Use a four-step filter you can run in under a minute. Source, signal, self-check, step. Source: has this person built or risked anything in the direction I'm heading? A carpenter can critique your table. A spectator critiques their fantasy about tables. Don't be rude. Just weight the input accordingly. Signal: is there actionable information here? A flaw I can fix? A risk I should mitigate? Or is this pure vibe? If there's no action embedded, it's not feedback. It's weather. Self-check: what part of me flares when I hear this? Ego, envy, insecurity, or genuine curiosity? If it's a flare, pause. If it's curiosity, lean in. Step: take one measured move that either applies the useful note or disproves the useless one with reality. You exit the encounter with motion, not rumination. This filter prevents two common injuries: soaking up poison and rejecting medicine. If you absorb everything, you carry limits that aren't yours, and your days shrink to fit someone else's story. If you dismiss everything, you miss the note that could have saved you 6 months. The shield sits in the healthy middle, porous enough to learn, firm enough to stand. Marcus Aurelius practiced this in his own way, meeting impressions with reasoned replies. The reasoned reply you're practicing is a process, not a clapback. Build a feedback fast once a week to detox your lens. For 24 hours, consume no unsolicited opinions, no comment sections, no performance dashboards. You still work. You simply let your own eyes be first. During the fast, ask: what did my direct contact with reality teach me? What did I build, ship, say, or learn that no critic can take away? This fast is not denial, it's calibration. When you return to outside input, you're less porous, more grounded. The words hit a body that already knows what it did. In relationships, projections often wear intimacy as camouflage. I just don't want you to be disappointed. Underneath you hear, I live with disappointment and can't imagine handling yours. Answer with tenderness and steel. I appreciate your care. I'm choosing to try anyway. No argument, no courtroom. You honor their nervous system while returning ownership to yourself. If the person keeps pushing, set a boundary around the topic. I'm not discussing outcomes right now. If you want to support me, ask about today's inputs. You're training the circle around you to respect your focus, less prophecy, more practice. Create an inner council on paper. Three mentors, living or dead, you trust to judge your effort and aim. They can be philosophers, coaches, craftsmen. Before you internalize a random remark, run it past the council in your journal. Would Seneca say this note serves virtue? Would that coach call this critique actionable? Would a master builder care about this, or would they tell me to keep planing? This isn't cosplay, it's perspective. It keeps you from giving a stranger's sentence more authority than a lifetime of proven wisdom. There's also your own projection to consider. When you're scared, you'll go hunting for realists to bless your hesitation. Be suspicious of advice you seek while anxious. It tends to confirm the mood that asked for it. Flip the order. Move first in a small way. Send the message, make the ask, publish the draft, then solicit feedback about the thing that exists. Reality has a way of stripping drama from conversations. People respond differently when there's a concrete artifact to discuss instead of your trembling. You'll also feel different because you're not bargaining for permission, you're iterating a choice already made. Adopt a tangible tool, the projection log. When a charged comment hits, don't wrestle with it in your head. Write it, attribute it, analyze it. Comment, this market is impossible unless you have connections. Source, coworker, stuck for 5 years. Signal, none, no data, just bitterness. Self-check, my envy of their stability is stirring, noted. Step, send 2 cold emails in the next hour to collect my own data. Logging turns emotional smog into a to-do list. You stop marinating. You start moving. One more practice. 3 circles of trust. Inner circle. Builders who know your aim and tell you the hard, helpful truth. Middle circle. Supporters who cheer but don't advise. Outer circle. Everyone else. Observers, critics, drive-bys. Decide ahead of time who lives where. Most of your hurt comes from handing inner circle privileges to outer circle voices. Revoke them gently. Shrink access. Share process with builders, results with supporters. Almost nothing with the outer ring until you're ready for noise. Privacy is not secrecy. It's boundary. It protects early flames from busy winds. Through all this, keep your tone human. Not defiant, not brittle, steady. Thank you for the note. I'll consider it. Here's what I'm doing next. Over time, people learn your cadence. The hostile get bored, the helpful lean closer. And you get lighter. Your work starts to sound like you because it isn't carrying the echo of 100 borrowed anxieties. That's the aim. Not to become impermeable, but to become coherent, open to truth, closed to sabotage, including the subtle kind delivered with a smile. Remember the line, don't let their ceiling become your floor, not as a slogan, as a system. Filter the source, hunt the signal, check yourself, take a step. Repeat until your evidence is louder than their projections, and your days are shaped by what you can do, not by what someone else couldn't. In the end, your life will be proof, quiet, consistent proof, that the harshest limits were never in the world. They were in the stories you refused to inherit. 10. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. Pain will visit. Bodies ache. Plans collapse. People leave. Luck turns. That's not a personal insult. That's the rent for being human. The Stoics never promised a painless life. They promised a powerful one. Their distinction is razor sharp. Pain is the signal. Suffering is the story. Pain says, something needs attention. Suffering adds, this shouldn't be happening, not to me, not now, and then loops that sentence until the signal becomes a siren. You can't delete pain. You can strip the story. And once you do, pain becomes what it always wanted to be. Information that can make you wiser, tougher, kinder, and astonishingly calm. Begin with names. When pain hits, your mind wants to sprint into narrative. Stop it at the doorway with three words. Sensation. Situation. Story. Sensation is the raw data. Tight chest. Hot face. Empty chair. Declined payment. Situation is the context. Missed deadline. Breakup. Injury. Setback. Story is the interpretation. I'm a failure. Love always abandons me. Nothing works for me. Write them in three lines if you can. The act of sorting shrinks the monster. Sensation and situation are tractable. Story is optional. Keep what you can touch. Question what you invented. Now, put your body on your side. Suffering feeds on physiological chaos. Do 1 minute of deliberate downshift. Inhale for 4 through the nose. Exhale for 6 through the mouth. 10 rounds. Unclench your jaw. Plant your feet and find one fixed point in the room. This isn't spiritual theater. It's nervous system literacy. Calm the animal first, then brief the pilot. From that lower altitude, ask the Stoic question that flips lament into leverage. Not why me, but what is this training? Training for what? Patience, humility, steadiness under pressure, clearer boundaries, deeper compassion, better craft. Pain without purpose sprawls. Pain framed as training narrows. Now it has a job. Convert the job into a drill you can execute today. Physical pain. Seek professional help if needed. Then implement micro-restoration you can control. Sleep earlier than you want. Hydrate. Walk at a gentle pace. Strengthen the chain around the injury with guidance. Emotional pain. Build a containment window. 30 minutes of clean grief. Write. Cry. Pray. Breathe. Then re-enter life with one constructive act tied to your values. Financial pain. Audit reality. In numbers. Not shame. Reduce one leak. Pursue one new lead. Build a daily revenue ritual you can keep when motivation is gone. Suffering wants you in a fog. Drills cut a path through it. Use premeditatio malorum, pre-rehearsal of setbacks, to reduce the shock tax. Each morning, spend a minute naming one plausible difficulty on today's path and the virtue you'll meet it with. If the client delays, I'll practice patience and move the next lever. If my workout feels heavy, I'll practice humility and do crisp form at lower load. This isn't pessimism, it's armor fitting. When pain appears, you're greeting an expected guest, not a dragon. Expected pain is lighter. It arrives to a house with a chair already set. Practice voluntary discomfort to loosen fear's grip on involuntary pain. Cold water for 30 seconds, skip the sugar, take stairs, leave the jacket at home on a quick walk, speak a necessary truth kindly. These small chosen frictions teach your system a profound lesson. I can carry discomfort without drama. Then, when unchosen pain knocks, your nervous system recognizes the cadence. It still hurts, yes, but you don't panic about the hurt. Panic is suffering's favorite accelerant, meaning-making matters. You are not obligated to find cosmic reasons for every hardship, but you can assign local purpose that keeps you moving. This loss will make me more tender with other people's losses. This failure will make my next plan tighter. This heartbreak will make my boundaries kinder and stronger. That's not delusion, that's leadership. You are the steward of your response. Stewardship alchemizes pain into contribution, first to yourself, then to others. Create a pain ledger, not as a shrine to wounds, but as a record of conversions. One page per month. Four columns. Event. Skill trained. Action taken. Note to future me. Got rejected by X. Trained composure. Sent two more pitches next morning. Evidence. Rejection didn't end me. It focused me. The ledger is your antidote to amnesia. On dark days, you will forget how many stings you've metabolized. The pages remember. Confidence grows not from slogans, but from receipts. Guard your language. Suffering loves absolutes and identities. Always. Never. I am broken. Replace with process and present tense. This is hard, and I am training. This hurts, and I can carry it. This slows me, and I can still move. The and matters. It refuses the false binary of either-or. Either I deny pain or I drown in it. You can feel fully and move wisely. Marcus didn't ask himself to be stone. He asked himself to be steady. Community helps convert pain, too. Share with people who practice response, not performance. Friends who can witness without fanning drama and can ask, what do you want to do next? Make a brief ask. I need 10 minutes to vent, then help me plan one step. After that, move your feet. Talking past the plan is just elegant suffering. Finally, remember impermanence not as a cliche, but as a rhythm you can trust. You have survived every bad day you've ever had, not unscarred, alive. And if you're honest, upgraded in ways ease never offered. Pain has repeatedly stripped away illusions you wouldn't have surrendered otherwise. It has taught you what is essential and who is real. Treat the next wave with the respect owed to a stern teacher and the confidence owed to a student who keeps learning. So when the ache rises and the story tries to bloom, return to the drill. Name the sensation and situation. Question the story, calm the body, ask for the training, pick the smallest next act. Repeat until the hour belongs to you again. Pain will come. Let it come. Let it teach. Refuse to suffer longer than the lesson lasts. If you look back at the last year, what took the most from you, events or reactions? Be honest. Most of our pain wasn't fate. It was friction. We argued with weather. We made lifetime decisions inside 10-minute storms. We overthought simple moments into sagas and called it being thorough. We begged purpose to find us while ignoring the power to assign it right where we stood. We clung to dead rooms because the hallway felt scary. We treated fear like a prison guard instead of a guide. We let other people's ceilings audition as our sky. And when pain arrived to teach, we added a story that turned a clean lesson into a life sentence. That's what these 10 lessons end. Not problems themselves, but the machinery that makes problems multiply. The Stoic promise is modest and radical at once. It doesn't offer a world that behaves. It offers a self that does. You cool the spike before you sign the contract. You move your feet before you ask for certainty. You hold the wheel you actually own and let the wind be wind. You interrupt spirals with 3 questions that return you to contact with reality. You honor the small, steady ritual over the romance of beginnings. You stop begging life for a calling and start pouring meaning into the next hour. You raise standards above nostalgia and let things end without theatrics. You train fear into a compass with tiny, visible acts before noon. You filter projections with a shield that keeps signal and rejects smog. And when pain knocks, you separate sensation from story and convert it into training you can name. None of this turns you into stone. It turns you into someone steady enough to love, to build, to recover, to try again tomorrow without needing a perfect forecast. The world doesn't soften around you. It sharpens because your attention is no longer diluted by fantasies. People start to treat you differently too, not because you became loud, but because you became clear. Your pace slows, your words tighten, your presence gets heavier. You don't chase, you choose. And choosing day after day is how ordinary lives become quietly extraordinary without fanfare. Start embarrassingly small. One 24-hour cooling rule the next time anger begs for a send button. One 15-minute clarity rep before you open messages. One, what's mine, what's not. Split on paper at the top of your key task. One 3-question interrupt when your mind begins to embroider. What's real? What matters? What's next? One daily ritual guarded like breath. One person helped on purpose. One door you stop reopening because you're finally busy building a better room. One fear rep before noon. One projection filtered and logged instead of swallowed. One clean conversion of pain into a drill you can execute before the hour ends. 10 moves, tiny today, compound tomorrow. You won't wake up transformed. You'll wake up trustworthy to yourself, and that changes everything. The apologies shrink because the messes shrink. The calendar feels like a life again, not a public utility. The mirror stops demanding a performance and meets a person. And beneath it all, a quiet line of pride appears. Not the brittle kind that needs applause, but the grounded kind that comes from evidence. You kept your word to yourself when it would have been easier not to. So take a breath and choose your first swing, not the biggest, the one you will do now. Then come back tomorrow and take it again. 10 lessons become 10 habits. 10 habits become a way of being. And a way of being is what ends most of your problems. Not because problems vanish, but because they can no longer use you to multiply. If this resonates, anchor it below with the words you'll live by this week. I choose action over anxiety. Then prove it in the next 15 minutes.